Crown and Country, A History of England Through the Monarchy, by David Starkey.
Chapter 1. Roman Britain. 2,000 years ago, there was only one power that counted in the Western world, Rome. It was perhaps the purest, the most absolute monarchy the world has ever seen. The emperor incorporated in his own person all the powers of the state, military, executive, judicial, and, in practice, if not at first in theory, legislative. As imperator, he was commander of the army. As holder of the tribunican powers, he represented the sovereign majesty of the people, and was protected by the terrible penalties of lesa majestatis, or treason. As pontifex maximus, he was chief priest. He was even regarded as a god himself, who was worshipped by many of his subjects in life, and by more in death. His person, his palace, and his very treasury were sacred. And Britain, the province of Britannia, was just a tiny part of this monarchy, which at its maximum extent stretched from the Bay of Biscay in the west to the River Euphrates in the east, and from the moors of Scotland in the north to the sands of the Sahara in the south. The myriad peoples inhabiting the empire spoke many different languages and honoured many different gods, but there were also powerful supervening forces of unity as well. First, there was the army. It was the Roman army which had conquered most of the known world for Rome, and it was the army which kept it Roman. So everywhere in the empire, the imperial army performed the same drills, built similar forts, and wore the same uniforms. Close behind the soldier marched the tax collector and the lawyer. So everywhere, too, the imperial bureaucracy, which was mind-numbing in its size, hierarchical complexity and expense, collected the same taxes, enforced the same Roman law on all free men, and used the same Roman weights and measures. In these and all other forms of governmental administration, one official language was employed, Latin, though in the eastern provinces, Greek also enjoyed a high status as a second as yet unofficial language. Everywhere, therefore, anybody who aspired to be anybody had to speak, read, and write one, or preferably both, of these languages, which also carried a common classical literature and culture with them. The same went for the visual arts, where, yet again, there was a single official style, the Roman version of classicism, which was used for buildings, artifacts, and decoration throughout the empire. How would Britain, which the Romans disparaged as the ends of the earth, fit in with all this? The first Roman expeditions to Britain were led by the proto-emperor Julius Caesar in 55 and 54 BC. These years were an interlude in Caesar's conquest of Gaul, which established his reputation both as the power broker of the Roman world and, thanks to his account of the conquest in his De Bello Gallico, the Gallic War, as a great, if self-serving, military historian. His first British expedition was little more than an armed reconnaissance raid. But in the second, he brought a substantial force of 5 legions with their auxiliaries, amounting to about 27,000 men. He defeated Cassivellaunus and penetrated north of the Thames. Caesar never makes clear Cassivellaunus's precise status, but the best guess is that he was tribal king of the Catuvellauni. There was some attempt among the warring British tribes to sink their differences with the appointment of Cassivellaunus as overall commander, and some success with guerrilla tactics. But finally, what turned the day for Caesar was not the force of the Roman army, but the weakness and divisions of the British coalition. Nevertheless, Cassivellaunus had held out long enough to stop Caesar capitalizing on his gains. Instead, after signing treaties, Caesar withdrew to deal with more pressing problems in Gaul. The Roman legions would not return to Britain for nearly 100 years. In 43 AD, Claudius, one of the most historically minded emperors, determined to complete the task that Caesar had started. Claudius was eager to establish his warlike credentials, but could not afford to take any personal risks. The result was that this second Roman invasion of Britain became as much a piece of
Sample complete. Ready to continue?